one of the former chief domos of the Players Association, of course, now with Hockey Night in Canada. Here's our friend Glenn Healy. Heels, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just wanting to know if I should send some cheese into the station with all that whining that's going on.
We always like cheese. Anything, but we like anything for free, Healy.
Well,
that's my code too. If it's for free, it's for Healy. Yeah.
the true Scott coming out in you, sir.
Yes, absolutely.
So
you guys make a good point because, you know, the Kovalchuk deal and CBA negotiations and who leads the CBA, they are interrelated in a lot of different ways. Because I think the one thing that the players aren't fully aware of, but they should get fully aware of, when the CBA expires, every issue is jump ball. Every issue. The last negotiations, they thought they had 100% of their salary locked and loaded. Then they give 24% back. So these terms of these deals, the 17-year deals, the 12-year deals, it is perceivable that through collectively bargained negotiations, that some of these deals, what may be guaranteed today may not be guaranteed in the future. That could be a negotiated item that is taken away from the players unless they're willing to stand up and say, no, this isn't happening.
All right, so now I'm going to ask you to put your PA hat on just for a moment here. And in pure theory, would if you were sitting at the PA now, knowing what you know about the Kovalchuk deal, would you be applauding and saying, that's great for us? Or would you say, oh, I don't like that?
Well, I would be applauding the deal because I think from Ilya Kovalchuk's standpoint, he has put $105 million in his jeans and he's got himself a job for life and will be there long after Lou Lamoriello is no longer there. He's got the deal that he wants.
Don't be so sure. Don't be so sure.
And it is long term and he is a rich guy. I think the big thing there is that, you know, when they came up with the 100% rule in the negotiations, that was really not the spirit of the way the rule was to be applied. It was to be more for the teams that would try to go on the cheap early on the cap and then load up contracts at the back end, so defer my problems till later when I'm fired and I don't have a job. But somehow the agents have found a way to craft and the PA to craft the deal so that the spirit of that rule goes the other way, so that, you know, players that are going to be in their late 40s and are going to be over at the KHL trying to lure players to different teams and work as advisors are going to have small numbers on the cap, but the team is going to get the cap number that is most desirable for them. So, you know what, would I look at the deal and say, you know, it's positive for all of the players? When I was a player, when I looked at the Yashin deal, did I immediately think, well, we're going to get locked out because of this lousy deal? Way to go, Mike Milbury. Yeah, I thought those things, and sure enough, they happened. You know, all that put together, you know, this is a deal for one player, one agent, one team, and it fits all the criteria, and it's fully legal. They have not broken any rules,
right,
and the league has endorsed it, embraced it, and both sides have collectively bargained that this is the way a contract can be construed.
But
it ain't going to be that way next time.
I was going to—you beat me to it. I mean, that's the situation. Is that at the end of the 2012 season, when Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman and their teams are sitting down across from each other, there's no chance of another 17-year deal ever being discussed.
That has to be collectively bargained. But, you know, if you start drawing lines in the sand about what the other side doesn't like, and you can probably guess what Gary doesn't like. He doesn't like the long-term deals. He thinks that these problems will bite clubs in the rear end later on, even though the clubs and the owners have agreed to these deals and think that they're fair and think that keeping star players in a city for a long period of time is good for the fan, it's good for the stability, and it's good to keep your core together. You could imagine that probably the 57-43 split in revenues, they're not going to like that. And in fact, basketball looks to be leaning towards a 50-50 split.
Right.
I mean, that's $180 million. Having other buyout periods for the skill guarantee of contracts is something that I'm sure Bettman is going to look at. And the one thing, guys, that's very critical is hockey will be the last to go. They'll be the last sport to negotiate their collective bargaining agreement. That means all the other sports, baseball, basketball, football, will all have collectively bargained an agreement. And all of those agreements, including hockey, are going to be all done by one firm at a New York, Proshauer Rose. And it is a firm that by the time they get to hockey and have worked on the management side of all the other sports, are going to be like the World War II veteran of 1945 that has seen it all. And so hockey needs to have their ducks in a row by the time that firm gets their grasp on a CBA with hockey.
Not to change the subject here, because we'll come back to this, but since you've gone down that direction, I have been told, and I suspect many others have, and it won't be a surprise to anybody, that indeed Don Fehr will announce that he'll accept the position of executive director for a period of 3 years while either locating or grooming his ultimate replacement. Is Don Fehr the guy you want to go to war with, given, as you stated and aptly, the experience, expertise of the opposition?
Well, you have a lot of different kind of parties that you've got to keep in play here and satisfy. You've got an agent community that is pretty sharp, and knows the gig, knows the business, and that has certainly grown. You've got 750 members with, you know, totally different agendas at times. 31% that is European. The deal as it exists today is very divisive. When they vote on the growth factor, you've got, you know, lines divided in the sand where players say no, it's more escrow. Yes, I need a job. The cap itself is something that causes division. So the entire deal is divisive as it sits today. So the leader has to be able to get some emotional equity in this group to get rid of the apathy, to get these guys to believe that with, you know, common sense, that as a group they can negotiate, you know, because they are an irreplaceable workforce, a sensible agreement. And that personality has to be very strong, has to be very experienced, and certainly Don fits both those criteria in spades.
Part of this whole process, though, in the collective bargaining, was to try to make sure that 30 teams stayed healthy.
Next trick.
That's the issue, is that 30 teams aren't healthy, Glenn, and the players do have some responsibility in trying to ensure that there are 30 teams healthy. I don't think the Kovalchuk contract helps 30 teams stay healthy. Or even get to the any level of health.
No, and you're right, John. You bring up a good point. There's probably 15 losing money. There's 9 that are either publicly or privately for sale, and there are probably 4 or 5 that are looking at, you know, bankruptcy as being something that, if the owner didn't have deep pockets, would be looming. And so, yeah, it's essential then that. You know, when you look at the business model that was created out of the wasted time that we had called the lockout, this business model just doesn't work for certain clubs. I mean, you just look at the numbers and you look at a team like Phoenix with revenues in the $25 million range and, you know, operating costs closing in on 80. Okay, I mean, I know we had trouble balancing the books when I was growing up, but, like, this is certainly a financial failure if I've ever seen it. But there are a lot of things that can change. You know, as you get up to this next agreement. And, you know, one of them is, you know, what are the ownership groups going to look for? Are they going to look for player rights as part of the next CBA, like football, where, you know, they basically have the rights to the players like the PA has now, and they can license them and grow the revenues at a higher rate and pad some of their books? I mean, that's why it's essential to have a strong Players Association. It's essential to have strong leadership, and I think that's why it's essential that, you know, when Don went in and was rewriting the Constitution, because the other Constitution wasn't worth the paper it was written on, that he gets a Constitution that whoever steps into that role can do the role effectively and command the respect from the other side and make things happen and get things done. And that attainable vision will lead to certainly something that both sides can live with. It's a $3 billion business, guys. There's enough pie to go around.
About 2 minutes. Would it be your opinion then, if when we get to the next CBA, that one of the things that the league would be looking for is to eliminate or at least reduce the minimum that a team must spend on salaries, and is the obvious compromise to widen the gap, to wit, the team that's at $59 million this year, maybe you allow them to go to 65. The teams that are at 43, you lower the bottom down to 37, something like that.
Well, the reason for that gap being so small at 16 mil is to complete the competitive balance in the league.
Which is BS, though.
Well, again, you're right, because Toronto spent more than anyone last year. Good one.
Yeah.
That really worked.
Yeah.
29th.
How's that?
Giving all our picks to Boston.
Well, and Phoenix made the playoffs and spent as little as they possibly could.
$53 million. So you're absolutely right when you say that. you know, it's not what you spend, it's who you spend your money on and how you build your franchises and having that strong management base. And until you get teams that have competent and strong people involved, you're always going to have the failures that aren't going to make it both on and off the ice. But, you know, that gap, narrowing it, was meant so that the New Yorks couldn't spend 80 and
I understand.
Pre-lockout spent 18.
Yeah, but
all of their franchise, but minor league and big club.
But you would acknowledge it was done in an environment and understanding that there were franchises even before the lockout that were in trouble. And that putting a floor on was a license for disaster for those franchises, unless you had a pie-in-the-sky belief that somehow these franchises would turn themselves around.
I could give you six disaster points in the CBA that just don't work.
Nah.
The business model that doesn't work, and obviously
agreed.
It's showing with the red that some of these clubs are bleeding.
Haley, we got to go. It's always great to talk to you. Come and visit us sometime. Bring your kilt.
Hey, what's under the kilt tonight, Heels?
Shoes and socks, Johnny.